bad leaders are everyone's worst nightmare, giving you the ultimate playbook to lead, inspire, and grow your team. Better Tech Leadership, powered by Brainhub.
Can you provide a short overview of your professional career?
I have a degree in photography in Bezalel, which is a school, an art school. And towards the end, my third, fourth year, I was looking for a bit more than what photography had to offer for me, again, a static image. And I slowly started looking at the area of After Effects and animation. And once I did that, I suddenly learned that the area that was most interesting to me within animation is the aspect of coding, that you can actually, you can drive animation and you can be much more powerful alongside lines of code than you could when doing things manually. And that got me very interested in the world of code. But at the same time, I also had a group of my friends that we all finished our degree. And together we decided to go on an endeavor and to try and do something of our own. So I had a couple of years where I was an owner of a bar in Tel Aviv. It felt a lot, well, it was outside, I was outside my skin, but it was very interesting to be an owner, a real owner of something. And in that period of time, I was also in charge with as being a bar owner. A lot of the things that you need to make sure actually happen is that people come to your bar. That is a very important aspect of owning a bar. And I was in charge of bringing tourists to the bar. And apparently tourists, and this is 2009, and tourists didn't really have a place to go at that time in order to find what was interesting. So and for the most part, what they would do, they would go to the concierge and they would ask him, what are the interesting things to do around that place? And that concierge, who was usually very much in, right? So people actually pay him to give recommendations. And that would be the way that you would ideally go about bringing tourists into your place. But the concierge and me, we didn't get along. They didn't understand me and I didn't understand them. And I didn't manage to bring anyone through them. So I thought to myself, how could I possibly bring these people into my bar? And I went about developing or going to and starting a new project called Tel Aviv Me. Again, 2009. So this is before or when Google Places or Facebook Pages wasn't a big thing. We didn't feel it. At least it didn't bring in people. And what I did was that I opened a kind of mini social network for restaurants and bars that it was mainly catered towards tourists and had kind of more of an SEO that is touristy and helped these places to advertise and to market what they had to offer for the tourist crowd when searching when searching for whatever it is before you do your actual trip. So I decided instead of doing the normal thing, which is to learn how to talk to concierges, that I would build a product that would solve my problem of advertising and marketing my place out to the tourists. And that got me off on a very, very, very deep rabbit hole of everything. So I did have a developer and I did have content writers, but at the end, when you're a very, very small startup, not even a startup, like you have an idea. I wouldn't even call myself a startup at that point. You really do everything yourself, and that also helps you to learn how the things actually work and to be very minded to how you need to be more efficient with money. But at the end of the day, I got to the point where, first of all, in the world of nightlife, I was never a good match for that, though it was interesting. And alongside that, I mean, I got to the point where I was very, very tired of that project, though the Tel Aviv municipality took my calendar and put it in their site and for my calendar to be a widget in a dot, I mean, like in a official municipality site was a very big achievement. And I actually did manage to like get people to pay for the service, but it left me with nothing. Like I couldn't take it anymore. It was very, very, very demanding doing everything together. And the growth was just not something that was sustainable and scaling out. But I understood that products and technology are two things that I am very, very, very fond of. And luckily enough, I had a friend of a friend that heard about my project, and he told me, listen, you can come work for me. And I told him, okay, great. As what? At this point, I have never done anything official for any company. So I didn't really know what it was that I was doing, except trying to succeed at this thing that I was trying to solve. But he told me, no, you're a product manager. And so that's nice for you. That's what you do. That's what you did here. And you can come do that for me. And I told him, great, I'm ready. I finished the things I've done before, and I was ready for my next chapter. And then I asked him, when do I start? And he told me, no, but you're not a product manager yet. You've done something, but you haven't proven yourself as a real product manager. So I told him, all right, what do you need me to do? And he said, come work for me, be a developer, learn how things work from the inside, how their engine actually functions. And from there, I'll make sure that you build yourself up towards the path of product management. And I said, all right, I'll go for it. At this point, I had nothing to lose. I didn't know what I was, apparently. And he made it clear that that was the path for being a product manager. And I did that. And funny enough, the person I worked for was the same person that developed me, that I had as a developer for the project that I did, Tel Aviv Me, because I introduced that developer over to that company that I'm now part of, being and trying to be an intern developer. And he was my mentor. Very, very nice guy. At the end of the day, for 3 years, I learned coding. The first half a year was horrible, horrible. It was very, very hard. But eventually I got addicted to it till today. It's my third language, Hebrew, English, and that. I speak it better or less depending on the time, but it's something that, yeah, that I got addicted to and is very, very important to the way that I made as a product manager. So I started out as a full stack developer, as a front end developer, then a full stack developer. Then I was a team leader. And eventually at the same place, you go, all right, now you're ready. You can now be a product manager. And that's what I did. And that officially launched my product management career, which eventually led me to where I am here. It started out from the products that I managed. The first one was an ad server. So a lot of algorithmics, a lot of efficiency, scale. The questions that were asked were mainly system questions. How can two systems communicate with one another? How can they do it in a more robust way? How can I transfer more information so the response that I get for that particular request is more precise? So that was the type of conversations that were had around the product, and it was much, much more B2B at most. But again, these were mainly integrations when talking about the world of monetization and advertisement. and ad servers for that matter. I did that also the position after. So I started out with Webpick, and then they became a company called Ad Maven. But at the end, these were monetization tools. So you're a publisher, you have a site, you want to make revenue off the content that you're showing on your site, and you need tools in order to do that. These tools need to be efficient. They need to bring you ROI, costs you money to bring in traffic. You want to make sure that each person that visits your site, you have some return of investment, ROI. And that was the whole mechanism behind that. I did monetization for a couple of years. Then I came eventually to a company called PlayBuzz. PlayBuzz is a company that back then what they did was but and still today, to this day, they have interactive content. So you can create interactive articles, interactive kind of polls, quizzes, personality quizzes. They have all these kinds of engaging content for publishers to incorporate in their sites in order to make sure that once a person comes to a page that has these content pieces, the dwell time, right, will increase and the number of pages will increase. So so that was the area that this company, that was their expertise. But they brought me in to be a monetization product manager. So at the end, it's not enough to have engaging content. You also need to make sure, or what PlayBuzz wanted to do. By the way, PlayBuzz is currently called XCO. They changed their name recently. But they understood that in order to make a content or for them to succeed better, they also need to bring these publishers an option for monetization so that the monetization comes along with the interactive content. And at the end, you put an embed code in your site and it makes more money for you than if you would have put a regular article that you have written on your own CMS, WordPress or whatnot. And my job there was to make sure that there was the most potential revenue made with whatever tools we had available to us. Eventually, we got to the world of video in PlayBuzz, and I was in charge of the video player there and the monetization there, and then later on the content, interactive content. There was a whole world around that. And slowly but surely, I made my way into the actual core, SaaS product, the creation tools, which was very, very nice. And at that point, my career shifted from the world of monetization to the world of that you actually met your clients or the users that interacted with your content have had feedback. In the world of monetization, there was very few feedback. And for the most part, people don't like monetization, especially the people that are being monetized. Well, you attempt to be, though monetization, for the most part, you understand that in order to have higher revenues, it's very hard to be invisible. You need to be very, very smart about that. Content recommendation monetizations have tried to do that, and I think are pretty good at doing that to a certain degree. So they are monetizing, but it doesn't feel like anyone feels native to the publisher. But yeah, that was way back then. And then I started on more on products that were gearing away from monetization more to the world of creation and consumption of content, which from PlayBuzz to the place I am right now, Kultura, my fifth year here, I started out as a director of product for webcasting live and ECDN. I don't know if people hear what these three products are, if they know what they are. So webcasting, right, or the main use case that was there when I just came in was the internal use case. For every big company, once every quarter, once every month, it varies. There's a town hall and all hands. These very, very big sessions that people or the CEOs usually or the execs have some kind of line of communication over to the employees. And they need tools in order to do that and to do that well. At the end of the day, it's a very big broadcast for thousands and tens of thousands of people. And that was what we called way back webcast. Live was more like the world of regular streaming 24/7, even though the webcasting was built over live. And webcast live. So live, yeah, the 24/7 channels, that's much more in the world. I wouldn't say media because it wasn't a product that it isn't a product in that specific. Kultura does have a product that caters to media clients. This particular product was just the pipes that were the webcasting that we talked about before, right? The town hall, you need to have the ability to do a live broadcast, right? But not only do you do a live broadcast, you also want to do Q&A and you want to do polls, and there's all types of interactive content on top of the live itself. Yeah, but you could also sell just the pipes, the live pipes that will enable you to do a live broadcast. And the last one, an ECDN basically says enterprise CDN, so think of it this way. If you're thinking about town halls, and a lot of people inside an office viewing the same content or viewing HD video at the same time, the bandwidth and the actual network with the organization network then within the office, or sometimes it's a VPN or fire. So it just needs to be optimized in a way that not everyone pulls the entire video content, but you have some kind of a caching server within your organization. So let's say you pulls the next 10 seconds, but I'll watch the 10 seconds that you've already pulled out from outside the internet. And there's no reason for me to go outside the office network because it's already inside, right? So it's optimizing the video the network for a lot of people viewing video at the same time. That's ECN. Those were the three products I started out with. So slowly I went out and continued over to the, I had some additions to the player product, and you find yourself as a product manager a lot of times, even if you have certain areas that you're an owner of, you still go and you kind of interact with other product managers' product, just because the use cases, or rather the way that the products interact between one another, they're very connected. And so let's say I have a dashboard that I would need to develop, but there's an area for analytics. So my dashboard would be developed and then it would be incorporated in the main analytics area. So there's always that kind of area where you'd go outside of your official area of product and expand into other products. So just finishing up quickly, from there, I went on to being a team lead of two product managers. And finally, my current position, VP product at Kultura, owning the entire product team and the design team for most of the products at Kultura. There's two business units here that have two different VP products.
Thank you for that. By the way, that was super interesting with the problem solving of the context of the bar and then moving into technology. I think, in hindsight, do you think that all those pieces of knowledge, of know-how, somehow work together right now, meaning that you're in charge of product, or the even very broad landscape of product or solutions, and this technical background plus this sort of entrepreneurial approach to problem solving sort of works together for you, I assume?
Yes, yes, it does help. In all honesty, though, I think one of the areas that contributed most was needing to solve the problem with zero resources. Because I think something that all product managers probably face is few resources, a lot of ideas, and how do you go about selling your idea and bringing people on board, given that you might not have anyone to actually create and build that idea with. And I think in the world of entrepreneurship, you need to be very, very creative how and what you create with the few resources that you have.
Speaking of this trade-off between, or this limitation of resources, could you share insights into Kultura's product development process, especially considering the broad landscape of the things that you built here?
First and foremost, as a product manager, as always, you want to have your data points or something that gives you some kind of connection into how well your product is performing. Because Kultura and most of Kultura's clients, a lot of Kultura's clients are enterprise clients, then it's very hard. It's not the same as B2C. So a product manager with B2C, their go-to for all their answers would be the dashboard, their product dashboard. That's not to say we don't have a product dashboard. It's to say that when you deal with enterprise clients, a lot of times the way that you go about kind of mining the gems that you need in order to decide what it is that you want to do next in the product lifecycle is, one, you have a lot of qualitative research, from research groups to talking to our clients to trying to create focus groups. So there's all that world to gain those insights and to better understand your clients. And alongside that, we do have, of course, the product dashboard. And we combine and we mash those two insights together to have what we tried to, and what we understand is the best of both worlds, to have the best high level visibility over our product, how it's being used, maybe use cases that will surprise us. Since we are a platform, though we do sell for, of course, specific use cases, we're always It's super interesting to see how people do new stuff with your product, and it suddenly opens ideas to how potentially your product is actually also doing 1, 2, and 3, but you thought it was 4, 5, and 6. So that we're seeing a lot of. Then a lot of, for the most part, and again, it's a cycle, right? It's a looping thing. So you start one point, but the start is also the end of, yeah, it's a loop. And from that point on, we go through a design process with, and of course, by the way, in general, when talking about the product process, we in the product group see that there's at least on the definition part at the beginning, there's a triangle that we work very closely together with, which is the product manager, the product designer, and the product marketer. These three positions work very close together in order to each one giving their own angle on a specific thing that they're thinking and how they'd approach it. But again, this is given already an idea that was brought to the table. At the end, the priority, right, is still at the hands of the product manager. But once they decide on a feature has been decided on, sometimes by the product manager, sometimes from up above, then this triangle becomes very tight and integrated to kind of work together in order to define the requirements. And they do some back and forth. And surely enough, I mean, at some point, of course, introducing and doing kind of, this is a before grooming, right? They want to bring in the R&D. And I think in bringing them earlier on is a good thing. I'm a very, again, being myself, someone that came from R&D background, I think their insights are super crucial. And a lot of times help us as product managers to also see angles that if you only think of the business, you might have missed. So again, trying to mash all the points together in order to bring the best possible requirements for that feature that you now want to go develop. And from that point, once you have kind of the feature that you're going to go about, you do the grooming, do the QA. I think at this point it's pretty similar and as to most places. But the thing I think that's most important here when going about these feature requirements and all, again, going to the enterprise grade and things that weren't obvious to me before coming to Kaltura is that there is no feature that can go out to production, or you ideally do not take a feature to production if you don't have accessibility as part of it, localization, privacy, redundancy. So there's all these sets of things that are all behind the scenes. You as a consumer, so you as a user, you're not... these things aren't visible to you, but the customer, the buyer, they need to know that you have them covered if you want to cater to enterprise companies. And from a product perspective, these things they caught me by surprise when I just came into Kaltura. At this point, they're the ABC, right? They're so fundamental when going about to the point where just as a process, what I ask the project manager, right, the people in charge of the actual boards and everything, that when you open a new epic, right, a new project, whatnot, depending on how you have things set up, there'll be an automatic story created for each one of these things, just so the product manager always remembers that the products that we bring out to production will always have this thing called enterprise grade baked into them.
How do you move fast with all those requirements in the background?
Everything that we build is also, we build APIs and then we build the actual UIs that consume these APIs. And a lot of times these APIs are a product in of itself. And then the UI is kind of the application that Kaltura has to offer on top of the Kaltura engine. But you could have potentially built your own engine over them. And when asking how you move fast, so you could be developing one API that could be consumed by various applications. So you're trying, ideally what you want to do is you want to develop once, and you want to reuse that development over various offerings and products. And that will be relevant for both the world of APIs, let's say an API endpoint, in ingest, I want to now take a video and I want to then take and transcode that video and create a lot of variations, right? Flavors, we call them, slow, medium, large, extra, HD, depends. So that thing is, you build that engine once, but then all the apps use that engine and you enjoy that, right? Exponentially, given the number of times the number of applications that you have within the company. And that's the same thing also for the actual UIs themselves. So let's say a media manager. In theory, you don't need to build a media manager for the entire, for all of your applications, you could take the same media manager and you could create variations and you could have different flavors of that media manager. So again, when asking how do you move fast, you wanna be very efficient with what you develop, and to ideally develop, anything you develop should ideally be used across your platform. And I think that's relevant for all companies, not just for Kaltura.
Are the teams also built around those services, for lack of a better word, or what's the structure? Does it represent the system or the engine in a way?
It's a great question. Historically, the teams would be built around products. Now, that is a bit confusing because in the Kaltura world, when we say product, it's not necessarily the thing we sell. So a lot of products could comprise one offering, right? So when you buy an offering from Kaltura, there's a lot of, again, the Kaltura jargon in it. And that means that there are a lot of, it's built out of a lot of products inside. And these products, per your question, have teams behind it. And ideally, these teams would potentially, you'd group some of these products together that have the same use case or this or similar functionalities over different use cases. But that's historically how that was built. But as everyone, we're continuously trying to optimize and there's been reorgs around how to best accommodate for again, the different, is it in built or across the product or across the components? And you can see some areas that are, let's say, component focused in the way that the teams are built. And you can see other places where they're more broader.
I would like to get your context of how do you guys engage the communities that you have and support those communities? These are communities of users, of developers. You have an SDK, so probably there's a community there, and of course the partners of the product, and how we work with that.
I mentioned before that when we develop with an API mindset. So then once you do that, and I mean anyone can then communicate with your platform, and it's very scalable to the point where you don't need to develop many times for integrations, but rather you have these kind of endpoints that people integrate into you. And that allows for a good, well, we do have a marketplace, and in that marketplace, we have our documentation, and then we could put these certain companies, right, from captioning services to whatnot, then connect over via those integrations that I mentioned before, those APIs. And everyone then is allowed to bring their services into the Kaltura platform. And of course, we have the site for developers, and we have our open source repos that are all available.
The pandemic was a very interesting period in the life of many companies. And I'd like to get the context of Kaltura and how you guys adapted your product offerings or maybe even the way you operate to align with what's happening during the last 3 years.
So regardless, even before the pandemic, several months before, Kaltura acquired a company named Neuro. And when thinking of what, and this is again for a second before the pandemic itself, Kaltura at this point had within their, we had technologies for both VOD, live, and RTC, RTC being real-time communication. So one, live, I am talking through the TV, right? That is a live broadcast. You can't talk back to me. VOD, just a playback that you know, the regular playback, and RTC. So this is a bi-directional communication talk between me and someone else. What we all learned to love and hate through COVID. And so this happened several months before COVID hit. And at this point, Kaltura was mainly focused on the internal use case. So we talked about town halls before. Kaltura was doing events long before COVID, but these events, yeah, were mainly internal use cases and what we call the organizational YouTube. So these were like the main use cases. Then COVID hit, and we immediately saw that there was, and this was actually one of my biggest I probably enjoyed that time the most, just because it was crazy. People didn't know how things are going to work and how they're going to be. There was a real problem that needed to be solved. And we literally had all the components that was needed in order to bring the best possible solution out there. And we just needed to, repackage it, to change the wording and to expand it, to do some variations. But we were ready. There's the go-to-market and there's the adaptations. But it was super exciting to be at a point of time where the world has been hit by this huge catastrophe that no one understands how they're going to do their day-to-day jobs. And ironically enough, the solution for the world's problem, or at least it felt to a certain extent, right? Of course, there's bigger problems, but still, in the world of product management, was in your pocket. And then we went about and we refined the product and we did whatever it was that needed to be done in order to get it into shape for the world of the external use case. And shortly after it hit, we did reinvent the first year of COVID, the big AWS event, and it was amazing. So we shifted and we did an all-in understanding that there's a huge opportunity here and that Kaltura has literally been building over and over and expanding and increasing the range of functionalities over the years, bringing us to the point where now we can bring it all into this crazy offering called virtual events.
Besides it being a really, fascinating time, was really intense at the same time. It was really crazy, I assume. Or...
Yeah, it was. I slept at the office. I don't recall me sleeping anywhere except my army service in the place that I worked at. So it was super intense. But also I have to say again, from a teamwork perspective and seeing everyone like understanding the bigger goal, and I've never seen the company so aligned and so excited towards something. So it brought a completely new level of excitement into the company, and no one slept for several months.
Can you share a particular challenge or a success story related to product feature or launch during your time here?
So I think the virtual events is definitely the thing I would feel the most. I mean, it has everything. There's a go-to-market. There's understanding. There's new personas. There's repackaging. You start asking the big questions of what are your main KPIs. So they literally had everything into it, and you all exploration, and you also needed to do a mapping between or understanding between the internal use case and the external use case. Then once you had that all out, you needed to start asking questions of, all right, how do I now kind of dismantle this into phases, into smaller components? What will differentiate me from the competition? So there were all the questions needed to be asked there. It was a brand new offering that, we had everything because of the internal use case, but still from a challenge perspective, it was huge. And also it was success at the end. So I'm happy to say it worked out for the best.
You like those the most, right?
We do.
My final question to you would be, what's your advice to future product managers, key takeaway that you've learned along the way that you can put them out there?
In all honesty, there is no right way to learn product management. Even though today it's a bit more formalized, when I started out, there was no school for product managers. I'm guessing that there is one now. I mean, I've seen several.
So I think setting your own business would be one of them.
That would work. But again, the business, a tech business would be very beneficial if you want to work in the tech sector. But again, it's not that you need to learn this, that, or whatnot, because as a product manager, you expect. So I always translate, or I always think of product managers as an equalizer. Like, in, if do you have a stereo at home? Do you, you remember the equalizers where you need to define each one of the pitches to the exact right? So you have many vectors that the product manager needs to control, from UI to presentation to technicality to being technical to to being just analytical, right? Everything has to do with that. So there is no department within an organization that the product manager isn't expected to understand and to somehow collaborate with. And as such, you're expected a lot. And it's fine if you, I mean, I've seen product managers come from customer success, like I've seen them come from the music industry, like I've seen them come from a lot of developers. So there is no right way. I can say that personally, two things have definitely very much helped me in my personal journey as a product manager. One, yeah, entrepreneurship, taking accountability for what it is that you're trying to do, and understanding that if it's not you, there is no one else out there that will do it, and understanding how things, and from there, I'm taking it one step further to understanding how things are built. So I have a hard time with black boxes. Like, I need to understand, maybe it's my technical nature, but I think regardless, given that you are a product manager in the world of technology, I think that is an area that personally very much helped me succeed, understanding the things that I'm thinking of and the innovation, the ideation that I'm bringing out to the world, also understanding how and what it's built on top of. And that made for a better conversation and helped me communicate myself better out to my peers, to my colleagues, and in the R&D world. So I think these two areas, full accountability, full ownership, and yeah, understand how things are built. But at the end of the day, if you don't bring to the table something that's new, something that's interesting, and something that will defeat the competition, I mean, there's a good chance it won't really sell.
Eric, thank you very much. This was very insightful. Thank you very much.
Better tech leadership powered by BrainHub. Follow Leszek on LinkedIn and subscribe to the Better Tech Leadership newsletter.